Hello and welcome to the MediaCat UK podcast. I'm James Swift, editor of MediaCat UK, and I'm joined today by Nick Manning to talk about principle-based media buying. Nick was the co-founder of a media agency, Manning Gottlieb Media, which was acquired by Omnicom in 1997. After spending some time in the upper echelons of the holding company, Nick became the chief strategy officer at Ubiquity. And for the past 6 years, he has been running a media consultancy called Encyclomedia International. And he's also recently co-founded a movement dedicated to the betterment of the ad industry called Advertising Who Cares. Nick is by and large against principle-based media buying, and journalistic practice would dictate that I should probably have a pro-principle-based media buying guest on for balance. But as we shall get onto later, finding people willing to defend the practice is not as easy as it should be. Plus, I only own two microphones, so I'd be lying if I said that wasn't also a factor. Nick, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's a great pleasure.
So, very briefly, what is principal or proprietary or inventory media?
Well, they're the same thing, and they're very simply where a media agency is buying media for their client, but also selling media to their client.
Thank you. Very succinct. And you've recently published a report into principal media called A World of Pain. So why is this, amongst all the issues in media and all the other non-transparent ways that agencies make money, so important?
It's important for a few reasons. The main reason and the point of my paper is to say that it is in the interest of no one. It doesn't benefit the media agencies much at all, except in the shortest of short term. It doesn't benefit their owners, the holding companies, because we're talking about network media agencies here, except in the shortest of short terms. It certainly barely benefits advertisers, and it almost certainly doesn't benefit media owners. So it's really a money-making exercise that isn't in the long-term interest of any of the players in the market.
Is it especially egregious because of the nature of the damage it does to those parties, or because of the scale on which it's practiced?
Not so much the scale, because it's actually a minority of the spend that's happening. It's the nature of it, in as much as it isn't being done for any reason other than to make more money for the media agency groups. It is not there for the benefit of advertisers.
Okay. So how do we get into this situation with principle-based media buying? Like, where did the journey from agent to reseller begin?
We could go into history here because it can be traced back to the 70s, but I'm not going to do that. We haven't got that long. But the principle of principle-based media, if you like, has existed forever because the media agencies manage the money flow between the advertiser and the media vendors. And by managing that money flow, they are able to do certain things with it, and they've been doing it for a very long time, and principal media is the most recent and most lucrative version of it.
So, I mean, I don't mind going into a little bit of history, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
So you say it started in the 70s. Whereabouts?
France.
France.
Although it's been practiced in many other countries for a long time. China's a good example. Germany was another hotbed of this stuff a while back. The history is long and quite well documented, actually. So there's been a long history of it. So principal media, I'm going to call it that because it's a shorthand for everything else. Principal-based media, inventory media, proprietary media is all principal media. And it's predicated on the fact that the media agency acts as principal to the contract with the media vendor. Therefore, they are responsible for paying the money to the media vendor. So they receive the money. Well, they receive the money from the client, manage that money or sit on that money, and then pay the media vendor. So they are in the middle of the transaction.
And so when did it come to the UK, do you know?
It's always existed in the UK. Oh, okay. This is nothing new. The only significant market where it didn't exist was the US, and it only really got to the US probably about 15 years ago. And one of the reasons they started doing this in the US was so that they could actually take advantage of the money flow, because prior to that, the media agencies acted as agent to their clients, which meant they had fiduciary duties towards them and really couldn't do the kind of things that they're now able to do as principals to the contract.
So what changed to allow them to then enable to do that?
Well, because they declared themselves principals and said, right, from now on, we're going to treat this as a principal job. So we are agents on part of the money, but principals on other parts of the money. So they're basically mixing and matching those two roles. So on the one hand, they are responsible to their client as agent, but they're also principals to the media transaction with the vendors. And so they can buy and sell at the same time.
And so I have to ask, obviously, as a former head of a media agency, did you ever engage in principal-based media buying?
Well, one of the reasons I left the media agency world when I did was because it was starting to become mainstream. It had always been there for a long time, but it was relatively low-key. There wasn't a lot of it going on. As I say, it existed for a long time. But for most of my career in media agencies, we didn't do any of this. And it wasn't part of our worldview at all. And then in the early 2000s, it started to spread, mostly out of continental Europe. That's not an old-fashioned expression. And then it started to get into other places and eventually made its way across the Atlantic to the US sometime later.
So obviously, principal media has been it's been well reported on, to say the least, over the past 18 months or so especially.
Yeah.
But according to you, the people who know the most about it have absented themselves from the situation or the conversation. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's become something of a dirty secret, really. I mean, the peculiar thing is, and I'll never be able to explain this well, is that at earnings calls, when the CEOs of the holding companies are talking to analysts and shareholders, they go, yes, we really believe in principal media, and we're going to do more of it. One reason that IPG is being acquired by Omnicom is because they weren't doing very much of it. As a result, their financial performance was not very good, and it left them vulnerable to Omnicom's overtures. So principal media is touted by the holding companies as being a significant part of their game. But that is the only place you will ever find it referred to. You won't find it on any agency websites. You won't find it in any other marketing material. The quasi entities who sit behind it, behind the advertising, behind the media agencies and behind the media agency groups, there are trading desks in all of the holding companies that a lot of people don't even know about or haven't heard of. And they are buried pretty deep in the machine, as it were. But they're the ones who are supposedly doing the principal trading alongside the non-principal trading. And those entities exist, but you won't find them referred to in very much at all in the public domain.
And I mean, presumably, like, this strategy isn't doing its job of keeping the news away from advertisers and clients or keeping it out of the industry. I mean, is there any sense that from your conversations with people that holding companies are going to change this tact and start talking about it more openly?
No, I don't think they will, because if they were going to, they would have done by now. Because on the one hand, they're telling the analysts and the shareholders that it's the best thing since sliced bread. But their problem is that if they say that to the analysts and shareholders, the analysts and shareholders go, yeah, but you're becoming quite reliant upon it now, aren't you? Because we know you're doing more of it and it's got a higher margin. Is that a good thing from the financial stability of the holding company? The advertisers watch this stuff because they're not silly either. And they look at it and go, yeah, you're making loads of money out of this and that's kind of our money. So they have to tread this very, very thin ice, really, which is they want to make more from it, but they don't want to make out that they're making too much from it. But when, as I say in my piece, when WPP announced their 2024 year-end results, they talked about they weren't very happy with the performance. Only Group M grew, the other four divisions declined. And one of the things they said they were going to do was do more principal media. So in other words, they're going to double down on that. And that was one of the reasons they said to the financial community that we are going to perform better in the future, although the Q1 results don't necessarily show that. So they want to do more of it, but they also realize that it's a compromised position if they appear to be too reliant upon it, both for the financial community and making too much money out of it for the advertiser community.
I mean, that was going to be one of my questions, basically. I mean, it's clear from the results of the past 3-4 years now that agencies, that holding companies are increasingly relying on media agencies for their revenue. But to what extent are media agencies relying on the principal media for their revenue?
Increasingly so. So the way I phrase it is that the holding companies have become much too reliant upon their media agency networks, and the media agency networks have become far too reliant on non-transparent and principal media. It's very important to understand that principal media is only one of the things that they do in order to boost their revenues. It is the visible tip of the iceberg. There's plenty underneath the water that they don't talk about at all to anybody. So if you take all of the money they make from non-client sources, then in many instances, some of the media agencies are making more money out of the supply chain, shall we say, than they are out of their clients, which is probably not a sustainable position in the longer term, because the clients are much more aware of this now than ever before, and they're starting to challenge the agency groups on the amount of money they're making versus the benefits to the advertisers themselves.
And can you give us an indication of what you are led to believe some of these other less visible practices are? Yeah.
Well, again, in the paper, I talk about this. So there are cash rebates where they get money back from vendors for hitting volume. There are as free inventory and low cost inventory that they can resell to their clients at a premium. And if you've got free inventory, any money you charge for it is at an infinite profit margin. There are things called preferred supplier relationships where you use certain key partners, in particularly in things like ad tech, where the ad tech partner you are using will give you a share of the revenue back. There are things called services at a premium, where you deliver a service to a client, to a media owner, bit of research, but charge a disproportionately high amount of money for it. Program finance, where you pay money up front to make, say, a TV program, but you get given the airtime in that program for nothing in return, and you can make a big margin on that. And so on and so forth. And the great thing about the media trading guys who do this stuff, they're incredibly inventive, they're very clever, and they're always looking for, you know, new ways to make money out of new trading systems, things like retail media, for example.
I mean, in your paper, you also talk about the margins on principal-based media buying.
Yeah.
And there's two numbers quoted. One is over 50%. And one is around 90%. So am I understanding that correctly, that in the second situation, an agency is, say, buying a piece of media for $10 and charging a client $100 for it?
A 90% margin would be yes. Now, bear in mind that if the inventory you're getting is free, then you can't even calculate that. If you get it for $10 and you sell it for $100, yes, you could be. But those numbers came from the ANA study. They were part of the K2 intelligence report back in 2016, and those numbers come directly from there. The reality, of course, is nobody quite knows. There's no data on this, nor is there likely to be. So it is conjecture. But there are plenty of people in the marketplace who are prepared to estimate these numbers. But everybody just knows it's a big number. They are big numbers. And the other thing they like about it, the agencies, is that it's free money because you don't have to win business to make it. You don't have to use there's no cost attached to extra cost. You don't have to employ people to do it. So you can make massive margins, and there's virtually no cost attached. So it's the best kind of media trading in a way, because it's easily the most profitable.
Mm. And so, I mean, as you've obviously said, proprietary media is often sold as a win-win-win for everyone involved. But reading your report, it's presented much as a lose-lose-lose. So let's start with agencies specifically. Why is it so terrible for them to have a source of revenue that delivers massive margins at a time when the value of their services is being squeezed?
It's great for them in the short term, because it means that they are able to sustain their profit margins at a time when profit margins of the groups as a whole are being eroded. So you'll have seen the Q1 results. You'll know that I think the growth in the holding companies generally was of the order of 1% or thereabouts. So what the holding companies are doing are using proprietary media, principal media, to sustain their profits, which I argue is not a sustainable practice in the long term. It relies too much on the acquiescence of advertisers in doing it. It relies too much on certain media owners agreeing to it. It relies on some advertisers who say yes to it to compensate for those who say no, and there are plenty who say no. So it's a risky business, and it's a risky business upon which the fortunes of the holding companies are resting. That is, so in the longer term, it feels like quite a precarious business model. Advertisers are becoming more and more aware of it. You'll see some numbers I've produced in my paper that says on a good day, advertisers are possibly 2% better off in terms of total discount on their budget by comparison. But it's impossible to tell whether it's working for them in effectiveness terms or not, because it's mixed up with non-principal media. So what's working, what isn't working is almost imperceptible. And it's quite interesting that the ANA in the US have invited advertisers, their members, to submit case studies of successful use of principal media. And according to the ANA, they have received none.
I mean, we'll get on to advertisers more in a minute. Back onto agencies. So it sounds like you're saying the biggest problem with this practice is that it might be taken away, as opposed to it having a negative effect on the agencies while they are practicing it.
Not taken away, but could change. I mean, if advertisers start to get more militant about it, then it might erode as other agencies take market share from the holding companies, which is happening now. So the independents are growing quite quickly. Dealing direct with the platforms is growing. So the in-housing of media is growing. So in a funny sort of way, the kind of pool that the holding companies are fishing in is shrinking. And as they lose market share to others, then that pool will shrink even further. So they're trying to, I'm going to mix metaphors here, they're trying to milk the pool or squeeze the lemon dry, whatever, choose your own metaphor, while they still can. Now, you know, the longer term could be that they move to a purely principal-based model. At the moment, the average budget is maybe 20%, 30% into principal media. The other 70 or 80% isn't. What will happen, and probably is bound to happen, is that number will increase, and it could get to a point in years to come where it's 100%. And you know, it is not inconceivable that in times to come, the big holding companies will be basically dealing in I describe it as a Bloomberg kind of way, where they're simply going into the market and looking at what's for sale, not necessarily what they need, but what's for sale, and see whether they can buy it at one rate and sell it at another. So we could move to an arbitrage-based model, and that could be the whole shooting match. But at that point, you're treating media as a commodity. And to a certain extent, media planning goes out of the window. And in fact, you know, one of the big holding companies sort of said that in 5 years' time, media planning would be conducted without human intervention. I think that was possibly overstated, but it's certainly what they are reported as saying.
Was that definitely planning and not buying?
It was planning, yeah. It's basically planning wouldn't touch a human.
So why is it so bad for advertisers? Obviously, you've touched on this a little bit, but I mean, they've got just as much, if not more, power and expertise in negotiations. They know what they're getting into. They are getting a discount.
Yeah.
And 3% of a lot of money is still a lot of money.
Yeah.
Or 2%.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're getting that discount on media, they would have bought anyway, and they know what they're doing. What's the harm?
So the trouble is that, well, the first thing to say is that all of this is in a market where what you buy is not visible to you anyway, because media is ephemeral. It's here today, gone tomorrow, or not tomorrow even, in a second. So the ability to know what you're buying is already minimal, especially in a market that's oversupplied with media inventory, which it is, which is why people are being bombarded by lots of it. And so if you go to, if you're a media agency buying group and you're the specialist division of it, you will go to a media owner and you will say, right, you know, I want to deal with you on a principle-based basis, a principal media basis. Here is what I'm prepared to offer you. And you offer me back the potential to do that as part and parcel of the overall negotiation. So the media owners who say yes to that have to be on the schedule. They have to be on the media schedule. Otherwise, the agencies won't meet their thresholds that give them the benefits in the first place. So there is bound to be an element of corruption is too strong a word, distortion of the media plan. A lot of people say, oh, is it you're buying cheap stuff and selling it on at a price? Normally not. It's more to do with the fact that a media owner who is prepared to deal with you on a principal basis is much more likely to get on the schedule. And that's why the media owners agree to it in the first place, because it means that they can start to guarantee more revenue and they get a better chance of being on the plan and therefore getting the money. It's that simple. It's very, very similar to the share deal system in the UK TV market, for example. So they can underwrite more revenue that way, and it saves them a lot of effort. Even it saves them having to employ a lot of salespeople as well. So you're much more likely to get onto the media schedule if you're a media owner who has agreed to work with you on that basis. And that's why plans have to be looked at through that lens. Is this media on the plan right for me? Or is it right for them? That was a quote from the ANA study last year. And it's very, very, very hard for clients to know, because you can't really tell, especially when you're looking at not the whole plan, but 20 or 30% of it. And it's not unknown for the plan just to have a little asterisk that sort of says, this plan may contain principal media. That's quite common, a bit like, you know, may contain nuts type of thing. And so unless it's specified on the plan exactly what you're buying and how you're buying it, then you can never be entirely sure that it is what you would have bought in the first place, let alone the actual inventory media, the media that goes there, whether that is exactly what you would have bought. So you've got two levels of uncertainty. Is it the right medium? Is it the right vehicles within that medium?
So based on your experience as a media agency owner, what are the chances, do you think, that this practice is not muddying agencies' advice and behaviour to clients?
Well, we know that it is because we have sources who tell us that it is. I do. So we know that there are people out there who will, obviously anonymously, volunteer the fact that this is distorting plans. So, you know, a phone call goes from, to the planners from within the organization that says, could you please put more X on the plan because, you know, we have a deal with them. And this is nothing new. This has been going on for a long time. It's just that the reason is slightly different to what it was before. And so media planning has been distorted for a long time along these lines. But now principal media is the latest version of it. It's also the most lucrative version of it as well. So we know it goes on. We also know that, so if you're talking to your media agency as a client, doesn't matter who the media agency is, you are talking to them, but you're also, without knowing it, talking to the people behind them and even the people behind them. So you've got your media agency, the media agency buying group or the media agency group, and then you've got the specialist principal media trading entity behind that. So you're there as a client, the people you're talking to are not in full control of the situation. They are being told to a certain extent, you must do this in order for us to meet all of our financial targets. And the media agency don't get the benefit of it because the money flows all the way through. They don't get to see the extra profits. It goes up and through into the holding company. So one of the complaints you will find from media agency bosses, if you talk to them privately, they say, we are obliged to do this somewhat reluctantly because we don't believe it's necessarily in the best interest of our clients, and they do care about that. But also, the money doesn't stick with us. It goes elsewhere. So leaving them short of the ability to buy the resources they need, whether that be people, systems, or whatever, at a time when everybody's sort of saying, aha, you've got to be good at everything. You've got to backbone and field. You've got to be able to offer a retail media solution or an influencer solution or a social commerce solution. So they're having to do an awful lot more, but they're having to do it with less resource because the money is being sucked up into the holding company to compensate for the profits of the being lost by the other parts of the holding company. And again, this isn't necessarily new. I've been writing and talking about this for several years, but it's just become even more significant now. And as the amount of money going into principal media and non-transparent media grows.
Okay, thank you. It's sometimes presented as a bit of a fudge that agencies and clients are in on together.
Yeah.
You know, the advertisers, their procurement department won't allow them to...
Yeah.
Won't give them any more budget for non-working media. So this is a way to funnel that money into working media. But you don't seem to put much stock in this explanation. Why is that?
Because I don't recognise. I've been involved in quite a long time and I've never, ever seen procurement prevent another part of the company having something. It doesn't work that way. You brief the agency groups. You know, if it's a pitch situation, you say, here is an RFP, request for proposal. And you don't say, oh, by the way, don't offer us that to us unless it's bundled up over here. You know, that you put out maybe five different RFPs to five different agencies and you leave them to come back with the proposals. Procurement don't tell marketing what to do. They get very involved, but they don't prescribe or prevent stuff happening. It's then up to the agencies to come back with the best solution. I mean, the most extraordinary thing was, I mean, when one very large advertiser pitched their business last year out to, I think, five different agency groups, they said, no principal media, please, don't offer it to us. But they all did because they were worried that if they didn't, somebody else would. They were worried that a lot of the things they were trying to propose weren't achievable without it. It's what they are using to try and persuade advertisers that it is in their interests to do it as well as the interests of the agency. And it's dressed up in a way as if to say, right, look, you know, we know that we're not earning enough money out of doing this in this way because the fees are too low, because procurement have forced us down, which also is a fiction, by the way. It's they offer the fee. It's not like clients don't sit there and go, I want low fees and low CPMs on the media. They say, make us an offer. But then it does become about low fees and low CPMs. So the agencies kind of go, well, I've got to offer low fees and low CPMs, which are unrealistically low. So how do I make more money on the site to compensate? And they try to negotiate that as much as they can through the contracts to try and include principal media, exclude certain aspects of non-transparent media and so on. So the whole thing becomes a big negotiation. And clients aren't as good at that negotiation as the agencies are. They tend to come out second best.
Okay, now onto the media owners. Principal-based media buying gives them certainty,
yep.
Allows them to reduce sales costs before more of it is bought in bulk by fewer organisations.
Yeah.
Why is it so bad for them?
Because it increases their vulnerability to the big agency groups. They rely upon them more. And bear in mind that the sales market is very imbalanced between the haves and the have-nots, so that platforms are taking 70% of the worldwide advertising spend now across the whole of the globe, including the Chinese guys, Tencent and so on. So everybody else is scrabbling for the crumbs from the table. So if you are one of those media owners and you're struggling for revenue, you have to do certain things to get on the schedule. And if one of those things is to agree to sell or to give the agency the rights over some of your media, then that is what you have to do. But it does mean you're giving agency to the media, as it were, in inverted commas, to decide how that media is used. And it does mean also that you may not be getting as much for your inventory as you might have done in other scenarios. But I think it's fair to say that the media owners who do this are quite used to this now. It's been going on in various forms for a long time now. So they're quite phlegmatic about it. It's yet another way of trying to make sure you get on the schedule and guarantee volume. So it's not in their long-term interests, but it's kind of a pragmatic solution to a short-term revenue problem.
So I'm not sure I understand why selling in this way is ceding more control, or why that seeding is necessarily so bad that it negates the benefit of certainty of revenue.
Because effectively what you're saying is, I am going to sell you my inventory, but you as the agency are going to decide which parts of it are going to be based on principal media or non-principal media, how it's going to be used, where it's going to go. So if you resell something on behalf of anybody, if you're a computer manufacturer, you know, as they call them, OEMs or whatever, and you've got a reseller, then to a certain extent, your job has been taken away from you. You're selling through a third party, which means you lose a degree of control over how it's sold, the price it's sold at, and so on. So, and by the way, this works differently in every single country of the world, because that's the way that media sales is not done on a regional or global basis. So it will be different for every single media owner in any country. And they will make their own decisions about how to do this. So the country head for the agencies kind of go and negotiate this with whoever in whatever way, as long as you get to the right answer. So to generalize about how this works for the media owners is quite a difficult thing. But broadly speaking, the people that I have spoken to on the media owner side about this don't like it, because it's yet another pressure upon them and yet another example of where they have to effectively do these things, even though they'd rather not do them, because the power of the media agency groups is greater than their own individual power, because you've only got 6 media agency groups and you've got hundreds and thousands of media owners, all of whom are having to sort of feed off the same source. So it's all part of the scrap for market share. And this is in a market where, take programmatic, for example. I mean, the kind of revenues that a lot of publishers are getting are very poor by the time all of the ad tech guys have taken their cut out of it, by the time the money flows through. We've seen all the studies from the ANA, ISBAR, et cetera. We know that there's a lot of leakage along the way. So there's a major scrap for dollars going on out there.
And I mean, you started off by mentioning the imbalance with platforms. In your report, you state that many platforms refuse to engage in principal-based media buying, and that so media agencies have to look for other more vulnerable owners to deal with. But we've recently seen Meta embracing it.
Yep.
Does that negate your argument?
No, it reinforces my argument.
How so?
By the way, before we talk about that, it is commonly said that people like Google don't offer media agency incentives. That is completely untrue. And it's not in that paper, but there's a whole list of things that Google do, they all came out of the Department of Justice trial in the US, where they listed out all of the incentives that Google offered to agencies to bring in more revenue. And that was included in the judgment about Google's monopoly of the ad space, which was the result of which was only declared last week. So the platforms do offer incentives of a lot of different kinds, but broadly speaking, up until recently, not offering principal-based media, largely because they're making a lot of money anyway. They don't need to do it. Meta, and you could argue this is quite clever, have said, okay, no, we're prepared to do it. Because if it means that they're going to get more money that way out of the media agency groups, and they've looked at this and gone, well, the media agency is going to make more money out of it, therefore they're more likely to recommend us, as if that was a problem already. It's bound to happen. And I think, principal media trading is not only here to stay, it's going to be a big part of the future.
So you say that this risks walled gardens becoming even blacker boxes in your report. What does that mean exactly?
Well, they're already walled gardens. Obviously, they're called walled gardens for a reason. They're obviously already black boxes. What it means is that you will not, if you're an advertiser advertising on Meta on a principal-based basis, you will not really know what price your agency is paying for your Meta inventory. So not only will you not know what audience is being delivered or whether it's reaching anybody or not, or even where it's landing, let's get into user and brand safety later. You will not know how well it's working unless you use some very basic metrics like click-through rates and so on. But you also won't know exactly how much money, what the buying price is either. So you might know that now, if you're lucky, but you won't know it in the future. You won't know whether the agency is paying a dollar CPM, but you're paying $2 CPM. Because that won't be visible to you. If you've opted into it, you won't know that. So you won't know what price you've paid. You won't know whether it's reached, the right people in the right way with viewability scores. And you might get some information out the back end about last click attribution or whatever. So it just adds an extra layer of obscurity to what is already an obscure system.
And is that what you meant when you said the news about Meta embracing it reinforces your argument, or is it another point? Sorry.
No, it reinforces my argument that this is not good for clients, advertisers, because they will have even less visibility of what's going on. It reinforces my argument that agencies will become even more reliant upon media trading practices that are not in the interest of the advertiser. It will favour Meta, probably, because they wouldn't do it unless it did. But by favouring Meta, it will disfavour anybody who is trying to compete versus Meta, which is just about everybody else. So it's not in. It's the only people who benefit from that is Meta, and I think they've done quite well enough already. Thank you.
One other thing you mentioned in one of your reports was that principal media will play an important role for the holding companies and the big platforms in the near future as they race to own the AI space.
Yeah.
What has this got to do with AI?
Everything, really, because they're all building their own platforms. I mean, you've got the open platform from WPP, for example, and Omni within Omnicom. And these platforms will effectively be able to generate advertising content and distribute that advertising content pretty much the touch of a few buttons. And it is entirely possible that it will be purely arbitrage driven. So you will have what I described earlier. You'll be a trader can be sitting there looking at their Bloomberg style screens, looking at what's available in the marketplace, what's coming through from different media owners, and literally going, right, can I buy that at $2 CPM, sell it for 10, etc. So it'll become kind of like a bit like the metals trading or commodity trading market in that, or could do. And I think that the big holding companies would probably like that because it allows them to employ a much reduced number of people to do it because it's all automated. And it means their arbitrage margins are likely to be much higher. So if you were, predicting what's going to happen in the future, you would say that the holding companies will morph into effectively AI-led, media-led trading platforms. So it, obviously creative is in there as well. But if you've got large language model type platforms creating content, and there's plenty of them out there already, and you're using AI to look at what's available in the marketplace and buying it on an arbitrage basis, then you've got it all in one box. And I suspect that's probably where the holding companies are trying to go.
So what do you think should or can be done?
Yeah. What I think should be done is very hard to do, but is in the long-term interest for advertisers. So advertisers should say, right, is this in my interests or not? Will it benefit my business and my brands and my long-term growth plans? And if the answer to those questions is no, then what would be a better thing to do? And a better thing to do would be to say, right, we believe in the value of consumer understanding and insight, first and foremost. We believe in the creative work content that we use in all of our channels, not just paid channels, but in earned, owned, and all that stuff. We believe that the creative idea is paramount. And is 70% of all effectiveness of advertising in all its forms, including organic. And we're going to put our effort behind producing the best possible creative work content. We are also going to spend a lot more of our money understanding the best comms strategy for our brands and our business, not just advertising, not just platforms, not just media. But, and it includes influencers, it includes point of sale, it includes branded content, events, sponsorships, you name it. So looking at comms strategy in the round, using all of the data that you need and getting some very clever comms strategies to say, this is how you should put the whole package together across all of the available options based on your business, whether you've got what your distribution strategies are, your go-to-market strategy, product pricing, competition, all the old things that we've talked about for years. So comms strategy is crucial to get the best balanced across all of that. And then you use AI to automate the activation and trading of that plan. Some of it you can't, because if you're doing a big branded content thing that involves events, you can't AI that, but you AI what you can, because AI is good at execution as long as it's properly programmed in the first place with the right prompts and everything. Don't use AI to do your comms planning for you, because it won't work. But do use AI where you can to take cost and effort out of activation and trading. Put all your money, or most of your money, into better content and better comm strategy, and then suck money out of the downstream stuff. At the moment, that balance is completely the other way around. So most of the money's been made out of activation and trading, and no money's been made out of content creation and comm strategy. That should be reversed, because you get your return on investment and your growth out of getting the creative right and then getting the comm strategy right. And that's where you make money. So, and the problem with a lot of procurement is it tries to save its way to success by sucking money out of activation and trading, or across everything, actually. But it, you know, the balance is wrong. So one of the things that is important is to get the business models right, whereby the balance starts to shift back to where the money gets made rather than where it gets spent.
In some of your writing for your initiative, Advertising Who Cares, you seem to indicate that really, if we want to see change in the media industry, it's reliant upon the advertisers, incumbent upon the advertisers to make that change. Is that not the case with principle-based media as well?
Well, principal media is part of the problem. I don't see it as a solution. And by the way, there may be hybrids of principal media which can work for advertisers, but we haven't got that at the moment. So if it's going to be a part of the future, which it is, the question for advertisers is, how can I really make it work for me? And also, how can I get visibility into what the agency is actually making? So it doesn't have to be completely black box. There are other hybrid versions of this potentially available. But it is down to the advertisers to take control. Now, it has also got to be said that the agencies are not all the same. There are many, many different flavors of agency. There are many kinds of agencies, but there are also independent agencies. There are lots of different kinds. So it would be wrong to say that agencies do not have a role in this at all. The better ones, the smarter ones, will be inventive, creative. They will come up with new ways of doing these things. But they generally won't be the agencies who have a legacy approach to the problem or are under vast financial pressure within their parent companies. It'll be the free-thinking, independent, radical, smart people who will do that. And one of the things that is unfortunate is that everyone in this industry tends to get tarred with the same brush. I've been accused of this myself, which is to say, all media agencies do this. And you go, I never say that. I say it's some, because it's not true that they all do. By the way, all of the network agencies operate in slightly different ways, or they conform to a type, but they're all a bit different. But there's lots of agencies out there who are doing brilliant work in different ways, not just in media, but across the whole, you know, framework. So the solution relies upon advertisers to do the best job they can at choosing the right combination of resources, both internally and externally. That means working with very good partners who can perform for them in terms of delivering that agenda I've talked about. But some clients might say, I'll take comms strategy in-house. They might say, actually, you know what? Like Specsavers, their creative is great. Let's do that in-house. So the range is fantastic if they want it. Part of the problem is that so many big advertisers are global, and they kind of go, I can't do all of that everywhere. So I need a network holding company to do all of that for me. So they'll appoint a single holding company to do creative and media and loads of other stuff on an international basis. And that is perfectly valid, of course, as well. But they have to be really careful, because when you do that, and you have a central office driving it all, what goes on around the rest of the world can be variable, to say the least. So there are pitfalls either way, and all that advertisers need to do, and if all, is to understand the pros and cons of different ways of working, and then have a plan for it and work out how to execute that plan. But most need help to do that, and quite often they need help from intermediaries who are independent of the process so that they can advise them in an objective and impartial way.
Brilliant. Well, I think that seems like a good place to end the discussion. Nick, thank you very much for joining us.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
And so there you go. That's everything you need to know about principle-based media buying that you were either too afraid to ask or which agencies were too afraid to tell you. And we need never speak about it again. Thank you for listening.